But let me tell you what I'm after. First of all, this is Bridget Cooper, and she is the author of Heed the Need. And here's why I want to talk to you, not just because you're my girlfriend. But you are an expert, and you are a coach, and you make your living speaking. And obviously you wanted to have a book at the back of the room, and you wanted to have a book, I'm assuming, as a an expert calling card.
Yes.
And so one of the things I want to talk about is how you put your book together, because there's a lot of people who are experts who are looking to put their message into a book, and their idea is the very same idea that you had. You want to use it as an expert calling card. You want to have a back-of-the-room sales product. And when you have a book, people, even if you basically spat in a book and published that, people consider you an expert once you have, once you're published.
Right.
And so what I'd love you to speak on is what gave you the idea now that you needed to put the book together, what materials you gathered that you already had that you put together, you know, how you went about doing it, and how you came to the conclusion that you wanted to write this book. Because I know, like a lot of experts, you have a lot of possible messages, but you chose this angle to come at your message.
Right. Yeah, those are some good questions. Do you want me to hit them, or do you want to take them one by one?
Yeah, no, let's take them one by one. Why now? Why now?
Why now? I have been doing consulting for about 10 years, and I have spoken with a number of my clients and colleagues and friends and partners, and they've all said, oh, you need a brochure. So I made a little teeny one. And then others said, you need a giant brochure. And I said, I don't want to waste the paper. And I'm not sure that anybody does anything but stick it in a pile. And as a previous professional organizer, the idea of my paper becoming someone else's clutter made me a little
a little
OCD. So I thought, well, I promised my grandmother many, 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 many years ago that I would write a book someday. And so it just kept itching at me that I needed to put something together that would be formidable, that would be helpful. And for me, not only did I want it to be something in the back of the room as I did my keynotes and seminar speeches and be kind of an calling card for getting new business, but I can only touch so many people one-on-one or in corporate classrooms or in group sessions. I wanted to touch many more. So to me, getting a book out there has the ability to give my message and bring healing and understanding and openings for change to a broader audience.
All right. Well, let's talk about the process, because obviously as someone who's speaking and a coach, we gather material right and left. We create it, and we have a huge possible pile from which to choose from.
Right.
And so talk to me a little bit about, you're sitting down, you've made the decision, and you sit at your table with your pile.
Yeah.
How do you even begin that?
Right. So one thing I'll say is the mistake that I made to kick it off with is that I didn't start writing stuff down somewhere sooner. I wish I'd been taking notes. And it's funny because my grandmother warned me of this back in my early 20s when she first approached me about writing a book, and it was more about my personal life experiences. She said, you are writing this all down, aren't you? And I said, of course, Grandma. Well, I really wasn't. And so all along the journey of being a coach and speaker and leadership trainer, I took mental notes, but I didn't take a whole lot of copious written notes. And I wish that I had, because it was harder for me to kind of catalog my ideas and my thoughts and my reflections on things from a historical vantage point. It became that last in, first out kind of experience where I was remembering something that happened a month or two or six or eight ago and not 8 years ago. It was harder for me to hold on to some of those smaller moments. The bigger ones came to mind, the more transformational moments came to mind, but some of the little things that would have been wonderful grist for my mill, I wish I'd written more down. So that was a point of reflection as I pulled things together. But one of the lessons that I learned early on, and I've been a writing coach, but of a different genre. I wrote a dissertation to get my doctorate, and I became a coach for writing your dissertation. So I knew in tackling this book that there were certain things that I learned in that process that were going to be really helpful in this one. And one of them was making it not a book I had to write when I sat down, but little bits of things that would constitute a book at some point once I got it finished. So that when I opened up the computer, it didn't look like Dante's Inferno. So that was a really helpful thing for me to figure out.
Who had you decided was your audience? Because any single book that we set out to write, we will go down a slightly different path based on who we envision our audience to be.
Right.
Who, when you sat down to write this book, did you envision as your audience?
Now, that's a wonderful question. So,
Thank you.
And my friend, well, you're awesome with questions. And my girlfriend Lisa would be chuckling right now because when I sat down, obviously, if I'm looking at this as a calling card and as a thing to sell in the back of the room and something to open up more doorways into my business, it would have been corporate clients. And when I started writing it and I came to the idea of writing it about unmet needs and how to feed them, because I recognize that in all of my corporate and more personal work that I've done with folks, that everybody came to me with pain. That's why they sought my services. There was some sort of pain, and all of the pain came from unmet needs. So in targeting a corporate audience, how do you talk about pain and unmet needs at a corporate level? And by corporate, I tend to infer a more boundaried, facade-oriented, boundaries and limits around our presentation and pressed suits and that sort of thing. And that was tough to figure that piece out. So I started writing it, and as I wrote it, I realized that I was writing it in a very personal way. And my girlfriend Lisa said to me when she read my initial draft, "Wow, you got really personal. Is this going to be okay for a professional piece?" And I said, "Well, actually, probably not if in the way you're thinking about it, but what I find is that when I come into these boardrooms and corporate training facilities and off-site meetings, folks are bringing all of their crazy right into the office. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not able to hit people at a personal level to own their own stuff and manage it better, they're going to be of no use to me in trying to collaborate at a professional level." So
was your biggest challenge then trying to make the corporate structure work with the very personal message? Was that your biggest challenge?
That, I think that was. And I tackled it, and I hope that I tackled it well. I know that some of my corporate clients have read it and have put it to use in their personal as well as professional lives. For those who are a little bit more insulated and don't like to talk about how the personal enters the professional, there may be some resistance to how I wrote it. But, yeah, it was a structural shift. I actually had to, once I put the initial draft out there and got that feedback that I wasn't presenting it in that way, I had to shuffle it and put some structure in it that made that message really, really clear for the reader.
So give us a brief overview of what your message started out being when you sat down to write that book and what you discovered your true message to be when you finished that book.
So what I did, and someone was asking me about this, thinking that I might have taken some of the premise of the book from some psychology premises, and I said, of course, I'm sure it kind of blends in there with different theorists on needs and, whether it's Maslow or some other model. But I just really knew that people were in pain out there, and they needed to have these needs met. And that was the initial message. I just looked at all of the different complaints that everybody had. What were the things that people were bringing to me as problems? Because my book needed to solve a problem, or it wouldn't be looked at or bought or taken to heart. So what was the problem I was trying to fix? And in looking at that, I was trying to get people to be in less pain. And when I looked at all the ways that they were in pain, it came to me that it was all unmet needs. It was all these needs that they had that weren't being met. And I had been trained in, years ago, something called nonviolent communication. And that's the premise of it, is that Marshall Rosenberg writes about it, and it's that when people are angry, they are communicating that they have a need that isn't being met. And if you can identify that need, you can reduce the source of conflict. And since much of what I do at the corporate and personal level is on inner or interpersonal conflict, it made perfect sense to me to kind of bring it to that place. It was really the challenge was narrowing down all the needs we all have that get unmet and trying to compartmentalize them into just a few so that it would be easier to recognize them and be able to own them.
So did your book dramatically change from the onset to when you actually finished it?
Yes. And the biggest shift was, I think, in a structural perspective. I think the message was fairly consistent throughout, although the way I packaged the message to reach corporate as well as personal audiences shifted as I spoke of, but it was really the structure of it that shifted. I kept trying to figure out how to put in the pieces that I needed to in the order in which they needed to reveal themselves to give people the right process to be able to help them, because I know that tackling a book like this is not a beach read. This is a personal project, and I needed to put it and structure it in such a way that it would support that process.
So you needed an arc. I mean, they call it an arc in a novel or in fiction, but you needed an arc.
Right.
So did you have a book in mind that you were modeling when you first began, when you first put your first structure in?
I had a few different things that I thought about in putting the book together in terms of a model. I looked at a lot of different self-help and leadership and management and sales kinds of books to see if there was some sort of recipe that they had for hitting the bestsellers list and getting the most tread and traction in reaching their audiences. And I looked at fairly short chapters. I looked at the width of their spines. I looked at the way that they used bold and italics and trying to bring people's attention to certain pieces. I looked at their writing style that was not, verbose and kind of distant. I needed it to be very conversational, because that was how a lot of those books were written. And I also, my favorite series is Chicken Soup for the Soul. And all of Chicken Soup for the Soul has is they have quotes at the beginning and end of every chapter or segment. They always have quotes. And I consult those books, if for nothing else, the quotes. So putting quotations in that would assist people in getting the message and holding on to the learnings that they have was really important to me, which is why
I love those quotes. I'm like circling the hell out of them. I'm gonna put that up on Facebook. I wonder if Bridget will notice that I'm totally robbing her book.
Oh no, you're not robbing my book. You're robbing those authors, and I appreciate the flattery. Thank you.
So tell me why you first of all, let me ask you this question, because I've had this come up sometimes, and it always drives me absolutely insane. This notion that you can write a book in a weekend. So you're sitting down with a huge pile of content that you have developed and written over the years.
Right.
And you're coming to the table with all of this stuff having been written already. Having all of this stuff, tell me how long it took you and why.
Yeah, so I should have had more written down. I had some. I'd been writing notes probably for 3 or 4 months in the fall last year, because the book just came out in mid-June this year in 2013. And I had started maybe last fall kind of writing some notes, kind of thinking of concepts. And it wasn't until probably January that I really started writing more, again, for my history and doing dissertation stuff, I was looking at structure. So I had to figure out what the skeleton looked like before I could start putting meat on the bones. So
yeah.
I didn't just write willy-nilly so much stuff. What I did was I looked at what is the structure and what would fit. So I did a lot of brainstorming trying to figure out what kinds of stories and what kinds of examples would need to be in each section. And then I started writing. I want to say that I started really heavily writing in February and finished my real draft to send out to people in, I want to say, late April, maybe early first week of May. But that was not my full-time job, but it was quite a segment. And there were weekends where I spent most of my weekends sitting in front of the computer or with a notebook down at Panera or something trying to write. So, and my book's not outrageously long either. So I can't even imagine writing a book in a weekend. But and I'm a pretty fast writer.
Yeah, I think I keep saying it's like a paw print, and then you say something like, oh, this is a paw print from a Jack Russell Terrier. And
right.
Then you have another paw print, and this is a Jack Russell Terrier when he's been electrocuted. You know,
right.
that's the only thing you can do in a weekend. But
right. I write really fast, and I wrote a dissertation back in 04, and I had an infant daughter and a toddler, and I was working my own business. And I wrote it in the wee hours of the morning and during nap times and, you know, amidst kid chaos. And it's 300 and some odd pages, and it took me, you know, I don't know how long in terms of just writing time, but I'd say at least a couple of months to write that. And that set departmental records. Like, it's outrageous to write that fast. So I can't even miss with my writing speed. I can't even imagine a weekend or 2 weekends or 5 weekends really to write a book any real
substance.
Quality and substance, unless you're just shuffling papers and typing.
So here's another question. I read this in your book.
Yeah.
I love saying that, don't you?
I
read this in your book, Bridget.
Thank
But you were you mentioned, or somebody in the book mentioned, that your deadline got moved up. Because
yes.
You had a client who wanted to purchase 100 books.
Yes.
How the hell did that happen? I mean, did you one day just walk in and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to write a book?
Yes. So I'm a coach, as you know. And so one of the things that we coaches always say is when you have a goal, share it. So you're supposed to tell people what your goals are. So I was in a workshop doing a retreat with a professional staff, and I shared offhandedly as we were talking about goals. I said, well, I have a goal. I'm going to finish my book. I'm writing a book, and it'll be finished by my, you know, first draft anyway, by my birthday in mid-July. And so one of the women who was in that workshop has another capacity outside of that work, and she contacted me about a month later and said, by the way, would you come speak to our group? And we always buy a book at the end of the seminar that we do, and I'd really like to buy your book. So will it be ready in time? And I said, when's your workshop? And she said, end of June. So that's how that got moved up. So I would have been, to me, foolish to not try to finish it. And once I committed to it, it had to be done. So that's how that happened.
You published through CreateSpace.
I did.
So what kind of help did you get before you put your materials up through CreateSpace and figured out how to do that?
So they have a tutorial, which I looked at, and they sent over a formatting thing, which was actually either misinterpreted it or it's wrong. And so they allow you to have initial courtesy prints, you know, for like just a couple of dollars to see what it is that your manuscript looks like when it's printed. They also do this whole editing piece once they send it in. But I didn't really have any help putting it together other than using their online kind of tutorials. What I did have was an enormous helper. My friend and colleague Melanie has done printing and, you know, this sort of thing for years. And I took her to coffee, lunch, and said, can you please look at this initial draft they sent me and tell me why my margins and my it looks horrible. And so she was able to tell me all the things I needed to do to fix it, and then I went back in and fixed it. So it was it was pretty, if a tech non-smarty like me can figure it out, you can. I would recommend talking with someone who's done it before to save yourself some time, especially if you're under a deadline like I was, to kind of head some of those challenges off at the pass.
So the other thing is you had friends who served as your editor.
Yes.
Tell me the pluses and the minuses of that.
The pluses were that because they were part of my editing team, they were also part of my cheerleading squad. So that was really helpful in them really being on top of exactly when I was going to be done and when I was going to, you know, have everything to them because they were on the hook. The negative part of that is that because I wasn't paying them and they weren't in my employ, I couldn't really dictate when things could get back to me, and they had lives. So it was somewhat one of those friendship challenges of trying to ask for something that you need, hello, feed the need, while at the same time attending and being respectful of what it was that they needed. So that was a minus. I think a plus was because it was about growth and about interpersonal struggles, and these are my friends, they know of my path and I know of theirs, so we have a common language in talking about the things that I'm speaking of and the personal vignettes that I shared. The downside would be that they weren't as objective, perhaps, because they didn't know, because they did know so much. They might not have given me a new vantage point that they hadn't already shared with me over the years. So I think had I had more lead time and had I kept my original date, I think I would have gotten it professionally edited so that I had a completely outside observer to share that information back and forth with me.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I would ask, I know a lot of writers, and there are some writers who I would ask to be editors for me because I know they have the eye for that. They have the eye holistically, and they have the eye for the small copy details, you know, punctuation and spelling. Oh my God, if I were responsible for editing other people's spelling and punctuation, the whole world would come to a screeching halt.
Right.
It is not my strength.
No.
Why did you choose these people, and what gave you the sense of security that they were going to do a professional enough job?
Well, one of my friends has been a copy editor person before in her previous life. So she has an acute eye for detail. So the sections that she was able to read at the timing that she was able to read them, and I, of course, then added in things. So if there are any errors in the book, they're not hers, they're mine. But she was able to go through it with her fine-tooth comb and read that. The other friends of mine were much more for they were for readers versus necessarily, I would say, editors, which was, if you're reading this, are you enjoying yourself? Are you getting the message? Are you confused by anything, thrown off by anything? It was very much maybe a 50-foot view instead of a very microscopic view that I was counting on another girlfriend of mine to do. I tried to find people who came from enough different vantage points. I had a more social worker type reading it, and I had a more tech person reading it. So they would read it very differently and very structurally differently. And if it met to their standards and to their desirability, then I knew I'd at least hit that. So,
why did you choose self-publishing through CreateSpace as opposed to a partnership press who would do the design and the editing and the publishing and all of that?
Honestly, it was a serendipitous coffee meeting that I had with a gentleman who had self-published through CreateSpace last year sometime when I had been conceiving of this book and talking about it but not yet really doing anything about it. And he said that that's where he went and he loved it and it was really easy and I could make it happen. And I am I eat fast food not because I think it tastes good but because it's fast. So to me, the CreateSpace option was faster, and it was more self-directed, and I knew that knowing my style, I would inevitably be up against some sort of self-imposed or externally imposed deadline, and I would want to have full control over when things happened and not necessarily sending them out. So I think that was why I didn't even pursue any other options, was because this one seemed to meet all of those qualifications.
Gotcha.
Lots of friends asked me, why don't I go for a real publisher? And I said, I honestly didn't want the rejection letters and the time. I just wanted to get something out there.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, it's not to say that once you self-publish that a big publishing house wouldn't pick up on your book, particularly if it becomes a successful book.
Right.
Then, you know, there's certainly an option out there. There's enough books out there that are self-published that become noticed and get picked up in a big publishing house.
Correct.
On a second run.
Right.
So here's the other big question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of folks who are listening who are experts and they are beginning the journey. What recommendations would you give them based on this whole experience that you've gone from beginning to end, and here we are with a book in your hand?
Yeah, I would set a deadline like I did. I would make it completely known. I would take notes every time you can. I sat up last night at probably 2 o'clock in the morning with a thought about something because I'm now writing a second book, and I jotted it down. So always have, whether you're a paper and pen type of person or you're more into electronics, have something near you where you can always jot an idea down and keep it in an organized place. And then get a team of supporters who are there to kind of challenge you and push you along and allow for you to take the time and space away from them and some of the things they might want from you, like my kids had to for me, to be able to support the writing process. And really the biggest thing for me was biting it off in smaller chunks. Like we discussed earlier in the call, weekend writing a book, okay, for some that probably works, but for most of us who have a lot of different things pulling our attention away from this project, just identifying an hour or 2 hours to write some certain portion or some piece of it to keep some forward momentum going is critical.
It's one brick at a time.
Yep.
That's the motto, one brick at a time.
Exactly.
So here's what I would love. I think your book is, first of all, it's really readable. I sat down, and I'm like, if one of my girlfriends had published a book, I'm one of those, like, hypercritical people. I'm like, oh, okay, let me check this out because I'm just totally jealous. Totally jealous that somebody else has, you know, like, actually completed a project as opposed to me who likes to have like 15 going at the same time.
Right.
And so I read with a real critical eye, and I loved it.
Thank you.
I absolutely loved it. I'm like, I love these exercises. I love the point and the stories that were supporting the point. I was checking out your structure. I loved the quotes.
Good.
And there were some real interesting things to take a look at. I was checking to see how long your chapters were, how you had sub-chapters. So, you know, you seemed to have, what, 6 or 7 chapters, but there were sub-chapters within those. So I was looking to see how that flowed, and it flowed really well. And I'm always telling folks to look for books.
Right.
Check them out. Model them. If you like those pieces, if you like the structure, model it, use it, you'll change it eventually anyway.
Right.
Your book is a very interesting book to model for several reasons. You make an excellent point, and then you're consistently backing the point up with stories that
right.
hit home. And that, you know, you mentioned that you had that outline, and the outline was primarily points. And then you're making notes, trying to figure out which of the stories you have that support those points.
Correct. Correct.
So,
and sometimes I would find a story, I would think back on something that, you know, because I remember the stories I've told over and over again, the ones that I haven't told over and over again, they've slipped somewhere in my brain. And so I would say, why did I tell that story? What was my purpose in telling that story? And I'd write the story down and look at it and say, what point does that illustrate? And does it match any of the points that I've been trying to make? So there were some times when I came at it through the back door because I knew I must be telling the story over and over again for a purpose. Somebody must be able to be, enhanced, their life enhanced by hearing the story in a certain vantage point. And then I asked friends, hey, I need stories. Just start telling me stories about management challenges you've had. And I'd ask colleagues, tell me about some management challenges you've had to spur my memory if I had had some of those experiences or if there was some collection that I could use for the purposes of the book.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So one other thing, because I think that sometimes we imagine what it's going to be like once we have a book.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an example of how cool it is to have had somebody read your book and say something about it.
Aside from you quoting me on Facebook and elsewhere, that's been really super cool. Seeing reading your blog and then going, oh my gosh, she's talking about my book.
I totally riffed off of it because I'm like, oh God, this is so good. I'm like, okay.
I love that. That is ultimate form of flattery, Anne.
You so saved me hours of having to come up with stuff on my own. I'm like, great, I'll just rip off Bridget and just go off from there.
Yeah.
So
there,
yes, thank you.
So aside from you, I have to admit, hearing you give accolades to my book is warming me from the inside out because you were one of the people that had I had more time, I would have wanted to have read my draft, but at the same time, I was petrified of you reading my draft and not liking it because I know that you have an eye for things, and I would have feared you not loving it. So thank you very much for that. In terms of cool moments of having a book, one is just the joke that I have among my friends when they have a problem and they come to me for advice, and then either they haven't listened to me or they're kind of looking at me, tilting their heads, and I say, you know, I wrote a book. Did you know I wrote a book? And then, you know, it becomes this like, oh, yeah, I have to listen to her. She might know something, right? The second piece was I've been on a few radio shows, and just that was on my bucket list to be on a radio show. And so the ability to be on one and to have the book be the catalyst for doing that, so super cool. I think the third and most awesome moment for me was at the end of the year last year was when I wrote the book, the end of the school year. And my daughter, who was then I have two daughters, but my fourth grader, she was asked, she came into school and she brought my book in for sharing. And
oh
she read segments of it to her classmates.
Several
of her classmates asked for copies of the book. And so one of my girlfriends, whose daughter is in one of their classes, came to me and said, do you know how I found out you wrote a book? And I said, how? She said, my daughter told me.
Oh, my God. Isn't that
so
fun?
That was like super cool to have my daughters, you know, and as women and kind of my upbringing of a mom I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and my mom was a women's activist and whatnot, and it just kind of cool from my perspective to have you two young daughters watching mom write a book because she felt like it, and knowing that that's something that if they want to do it, they can do it too. And both of them wrote a page in the very last page of the book. It's their page. And so now at the ages of 9 and 12, they're both published authors, which I think is beyond super cool. So,
basically what you're telling me is it's so cool and it's totally worth all the hard work.
Oh my gosh, beyond worth all the hard work. I actually, when I got, and I'm kind of, as you know, a bit perky anyway, but I came home on a Friday night after a particularly bad couple of days. Some things were just kind of, you know, messing up with my world. And I got to my porch and I saw this box, and it was my proof copy of my book. And I was actually jumping up and down on my front porch. I think my neighbors were clear that I'm insane, jumping up and down, like screeching that I had a book. So just that moment, if I only had that moment to appreciate, all of the hard work in writing the book would have been worth it.